Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's current sports. I am your host, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. It's another day, another dollar, another hour of great sports talk in store for all of you out there. What are we chatting about today? Well, it's a loaded show, as it customarily is. We will talk about last night's ESPYs. Gotta love the ESPYs, right? Love that award show because it's so inspirational. You see the best of the best in the world of sports all under one roof getting honored. Very cool stuff. There were various moments that had myself inspired and that I found to be quite humorous, especially Peyton Manning. How about Peyton Manning? Former NFL great Peyton Manning, a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, who hosted last night's ESPYs, and he absolutely knocked it out of the park, especially that introduction that had everybody cracking up. We'll discuss the performance of Peyton Manning, also a certain joke that he had that was directly aimed at Kevin Durant of the Golden State Warriors, and he even found a way to intermix the name of Russell Westbrook, KD's former teammate, out in OKC. Very funny stuff, all right? You don't want to miss that. We'll bring you some of our favorite moments from last night. We will also discuss a new rule that will look to speed up an NBA game in the final minute. We all know how that final minute can be if it is a close contest. A lot of timeouts being made, trying to figure out what strategy they should use in those final minutes to keep them in the game. And sometimes coaches just call meaningless timeouts in the final minute of the game just for no reason at all. So Adam Silver and the association has decided to make a few tweaks. I'm excited about these tweaks. We'll bring you that news. Also, our very own Jamie Paisley. That's right, classical music host here at WKAR, who also does some reporting as well. He does it all. Jamie has talked with the new Michigan State University band director, who goes by the name of David Thornton. That's right, John T. Madden will no longer be the band director of Michigan State this upcoming year. And we will also remind you of a story that alludes a bit to this latest news concerning David Thornton taking over that reign. We'll bring up a story that we covered actually earlier this year as it concerns John T. Madden. We'll recap all of that. You don't want to miss that. Trust me. And on the back end of the show, Richard Sherman, who does not bite his tongue, NFL star Richard Sherman of the Seattle Seahawks. He sounded off on the comparison of major money contracts when you look at the NBA in comparison to the NFL, and he has a solution if players want more moolah in the National Football League. And, of course, it is Thursday. We love to hop into our current sports time machine to take a look at what exactly happened on this particular date in sports history. We call it Throwback Thursday, a jam-packed show. You know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. The moment Miles Bridges decided to stay at Michigan State for his sophomore campaign, the hype behind Spartan basketball launched through the roof. Well, the hype has now continued to launch as ESPN.com's Myron Metcalf, he published his list, one of the best combos in college basketball. And the list, of course, included Bridges and incoming freshman star Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm already calling the kid a star before he's even played one game. Yeah, Metcalf wrote, quote, Tom Izzo could reach the Final Four for the eighth time in his career with Bridges and Jackson on the roster. Bridges' decision to return to East Lansing for his sophomore season elevated projections for the Spartans, who also welcomed Jackson, a top 10 prospect and versatile 6'11" forward. Bridges, who averaged almost 17 points per game last year, 8.3 rebounds per game, and shot 39% from the three-point line, along with Jackson, will present problems for any team in America. We'll revisit that story in just a moment. Michigan State men's soccer coach Damon Rensing has announced the Spartans' schedule for the 2017 spring season. The schedule features six games, including the final game of the spring season at DeMartin Stadium. The Spartans will open up the year against Detroit Mercy. The game is slated for 1 p.m. on Sunday, March 19, 2018 at the Titan Field. Following that weekend, Saturday, March 25th, MSU will have two games at the Ultimate Soccer Arena in Pontiac, Michigan. The Spartans will play Notre Dame a little after noon at 12:20 p.m. and then will turn around for a 3:30 p.m. game against Butler. All right, DeJuan Mathis reopened his recruitment last month and has now going to consider Michigan State. How about that? The Michigan State Spartans possibly picking up DeJuan Mathis. Big news there. He's a 2019 dual-threat quarterback and former Iowa State commit from Oak Park High School. He took to Twitter to announce receiving his dream offer from the Spartans. At 6'4", 185, Mathis is the number 8 recruit in Michigan, number 7 dual-threat quarterback, and number 308th player overall in the 2019 class, according to 247 Sports. Now, Mathis committed to Iowa State in February and decommitted on June 22nd. He also has offers from Pitt, Cincinnati, and Kentucky, among others. So we'll see what Mathis does now that Michigan State University has offered him. And speaking of MSU football, Michigan State senior center Brian Allen has been named to the Outland Trophy preseason watch list. Another watch list for Brian Allen. The Outland Trophy is presented to the nation's most outstanding interior lineman by the College Football Writers Association of America. This is the second preseason honor for Allen as he was named to the Remington Trophy fall watch list earlier this week, as we reported. Now, Allen is one of 11 players from the Big Ten, and there are a total of 81 players on that watch list. Allen enters his senior season in 2017, having started in 14 consecutive games, the longest active streak on the team. He has played in 38 career contests, including 25 starts, 16 at left guard, 5 at right, 4 at center. The ESPY Awards, one of the biggest nights for those in the world of sports. Standing among the best of the best athletes in sports last night was 20-year-old Dalvin Keeler of Flint, Michigan. Keeler joined other athletes during a tribute to the Special Olympics founder, Eunice Shriver. Keeler was part of the Flint area volleyball team that brought home gold medals during the Special Olympics World Games in 2015. He also received an honorary ESPY, one that he shares with his hometown. Very cool stuff there. We will have more on the ESPYs in just a moment. In an effort to make the final minutes of its games more fluid, the National Basketball Association Board of Governors on Wednesday approved a rule to decrease the number of timeouts per game from 18 to 14, minus 4 there. NBA commish Adam Silver said that the league has made some changes over the last couple of years to improve the overall length of games, but the latest change is aimed at, quote, pace and flow of the game, end quote. Silver went on to say that the league is happy with the length of the games and that he believes these changes will have a significant impact. Lakers draft pick Lonzo Ball has been a full-on ambassador for the Big Baller brand that he is a part of, along with his family. Yeah, the shoe company founded by his father, LeVar. Fans were surprised to find out last night that Lonzo decided to ditch BBB for the first time and switching his footwear to Nikes. Kobe Bryant's signature Nikes, to be exact. That I don't believe even haven't... I don't believe these Nikes have even been released to the public just yet. Now, while the shoes most likely have nothing to do with it, Lonzo did have the best game of his young career as the Lakers took down Philadelphia in the Summer League 103-102. Lonzo went off for 36 points, 11 assists, 5 steals, 8 rebounds. And, of course, LeVar Ball had to weigh in on this, right? LeVar basically came out and said, "This is the luxury of being independent. You can rock anybody's shoes, no matter what the company, and still have your own brand in BBB, Big Baller Brand, still intact." And he has an interesting and true point right there. All right, moving along here. Michigan State forward and recently named captain Mason Appleton has signed an entry-level contract with the Winnipeg Jets. The organization announced that news today. Appleton was selected in the sixth round, 168th overall, by Winnipeg in the 2015 NHL entry draft. In 2 years at Michigan State, Appleton compiled 53 points in 72 career games. As a sophomore, Appleton led the Spartans in goals, assists, and points, earning the team's Outstanding Offensive Player and MVP awards. The native of Green Bay, Wisconsin, was named to the Spartans' was named the Spartans' Outstanding Rookie in 2015-16 after producing 22 points, including a team-high 17 assists. This is a huge loss for the Spartans, as arguably their best player has decided to part ways with the program. Nonetheless, the Spartans still have tons of young talent and a coach in Danton Cole behind the bench who has a keen eye for developing players. We'll have more on that story with our very own Jacob Herbert. And lastly, we have news concerning the world of soccer. Chuck Blazer, the American soccer executive whose admissions of corruption set off a global scandal that ultimately toppled FIFA president Sepp Blatter. Blazer has died at the age of 72. Blazer's death was announced Wednesday by his lawyers at a November 2013 court hearing, during which Blazer entered guilty pleas to federal charges. Blazer said he had a rectal cancer, diabetes, and coronary artery disease. Blazer, who was born on April 26, 1945 in NYC, began as a volunteer soccer administrator only to rise to the highest echelons of power within the sport. But again, a career riddled with controversy, to say the least. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, share your thoughts, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/currentsports, where we are currently live streaming the show. Tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's start the show.
Someone's gonna be afraid of me just by looking at me. So 6 months later, after I got out of the hospital, I came home. My son comes running up to me, and all of a sudden stops. And all that fear comes rushing back in that he's probably afraid of me. But he just tilts his head to the side and says, "Papi?" I was like, "Yeah, buddy." And he comes up and gives the most amazing hug I've ever felt in my life. And he was right. All my son wanted was his dad. You are my fire. You are my spirit. You are the one that keeps me pushing every single day. You are my greatest accomplishment. To my wife, you are a pillar of my strength. You are an amazing and outstanding woman to be able to handle what you did by yourself and with a three-year-old son. And to my dad, hopefully I'm living up to the last words you said to me, that I'm always take care of your family. So to all my wounded, injured, ill service members, disabled civilians, or anyone who's having a bad day, I will stay strong for the ones who cannot. I will fight for the ones who cannot fight. I will never quit on you. And I will finish strong.
Was certainly my favorite moment of last night's ESPYs Awards. Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It never ceases to amaze me how the ESPYs, which I believe to be the best award show in the game, simply because they celebrate life, right? Not only celebrating sports accomplishments from some of the best athletes in the world, but celebrating the gift of life that is oh so precious. It's so inspiring watching that award show every single year. Last year, my favorite moment was watching Craig Sager before he sadly passed away. The famed sports broadcaster Craig Sager received the Jimmy V Perseverance Award, giving that riveting speech on how you should approach life. The year before that, my journalistic idol in Stuart Scott also receiving the Jimmy V Perseverance Award right before he sadly passed away. And this year, it was that moment that you just heard in our intro. Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. What a story. And I had no idea who Israel Del Toro was, and I think that's a problem for sure, because he's been around for quite some time. He actually was injured back in 2005, and just now hearing about his story, a riveting one for sure, folks. And again, we want you guys to call in and comment and share what your favorite moment was for those that tuned into last night's ESPYs. But I briefly want to address Israel's story because this was my favorite as I going on to state now for the 50th time. In 2005, Del Toro's Humvee actually rolled over a pressure plate, a mine, and exploded. And, speaking to ABC 5 years after the incident, Del Toro explained that he was covered head to toe in flames upon escaping the truck. And he says that he thought to himself, I'm going to die here. I'm never going to see my wife and son again. He lost many of his fingers, 80% of his face and body were covered in third-degree burns. And doctors at one point gave him only a 15% chance of survival. But he fought and fought and fought. Woke up from a 3-month coma. He was told that he would likely never be able to walk again. And he proved doctors wrong yet again. He even won a gold medal at the Invictus Games just a year ago. And last night he received the Pat Tillman Award from John Stewart. And I have to be real with you guys. I got the lump in my throat watching that speech that he had, which was riveting stuff. And especially the part where you see his wife and his son in the crowd. And he addresses the moment when he came home and he was worried whether or not his son would even recognize him. And his son ran up to him when he came home and kind of tilted his head. And he said, "Papa?" And he responds saying, "Yeah, it's me, son." And his son didn't care. He was just happy to have his father alive and home. And he proceeds to run up to his dad and just hugs him tight. What an emotional moment. And as you saw the camera pan through the crowd, tears everywhere, the ESPYs never fail to do that. And also, hats off to Jon Stewart, who is a staple when it comes to comedic culture here in America. Jon Stewart, since his retirement from The Daily Show on Comedy Central, he is always involved in making sure that those who fight for our great country are recognized. Absolutely love that. And he's very close with Sergeant Del Toro, and they have a very cool relationship, which John also talked about up on stage. On a much lighter note, how about Peyton Manning? How funny was Peyton Manning last night? You know, Peyton is one of those guys who's kind of like sneaky funny. You know, you see him do all these interviews, especially as it pertains to the game of football, and he's a bit serious. But when he gets away from what was his job, he's now since retired. When he gets away from that and is just in a social atmosphere where you're just talking about Peyton and who he is as a person, he's very funny. You know, I realized that, and many of you all realized that throughout his countless endorsements and commercials that he does with Papa John's and Gatorade and so on and so forth, car insurance as well. He does it all. And even when he hosted SNL, which he absolutely knocked out of the park, and last night, I mean, come on, he really brought it. Absolutely fantastic. And he actually took a few jabs. I was wondering how he was going to do this, because this is the first time that a true former athlete has hosted the ESPYs. No knock to John Cena, but that's wrestling. All right, that's the WWE. It's scripted, even though John Cena, he's got the crazy chiseled body, and, you know, it is a lot of acrobatics that are involved with putting on a show like that. But to be an athlete, a real athlete, you got to compete organically for wins and losses. So Peyton is that guy for the first time. And he flourished in that role. And I was wondering, because he's so close with a lot of the greats in sports, not even just in the game of football, I was wondering whether or not he was going to attack them. And he did it in a very clever way. A way in which, you know, he had these cue cards and he said, "You know what? The producers of this show wanted me to come out and bash all of you guys, all of the great athletes out there." I'm paraphrasing here, by the way. And then he goes on to bring out some cue cards. And he said, he went on to say, "You know what? They wanted me to do this. And they actually even gave me these jokes to say. But I said, you know what? No, I'm not going to go there. Let me tell you what they wanted me to say." And then he goes on to read the jokes that they did not want him to, that Peyton did not want to push through. But he did anyway in a very clever way in saying that, "Hey, these are the jokes that they had on board in which I said, no, I'm not going to go that route," which he basically did, right? And one of those jokes happened to be a clever jab at Kevin Durant, who, of course, left the Oklahoma City Thunder to join the best team in the world in the game of basketball, that being the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors went on to hop, skip, and sing their way to another NBA championship, the second in 3 years. And Peyton Manning had a very clever Kevin Durant joke that had a lot of people on social media buzzing because of Kevin Durant's reaction. And here is how that joke went.
"Our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year." "Tell you, I don't think you'd start for that team, Kevin." Yeah. "Russell Westbrook, what do you think?"
That was great. Props to you, Peyton, or props to whoever wrote that joke, I should say. That was great stuff. So Peyton Manning, of course, paying homage to the Olympic gymnastics team known as the Fierce Five, Gabby Douglas, Simone Biles, Lori Hernandez and company, who, of course, took home the gold medal out in Rio. And then, of course, taking a jab at Kevin Durant and saying, hey, they're so dominant. I think Kevin Durant has stated that he wants to be a part of what they have going on. And it was so funny. But it was so good because the camera pans to Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant is not laughing. He is giving this plain look like, dude, that's not funny. Like, he looked organically annoyed. His mother was sitting right next to him. She's cracking up. Everybody's cracking up around him. But Kevin Durant looked like, no, that's not funny. Why? Why even go there? And then they go to Russell Westbrook because Peyton, of course, says, hey, Russell Westbrook, what do you think? And then Russ is trying so hard to maintain his emotion. And he had like his hand on his face like, yeah, I'm not even going to address that. And a lot of people, it was so good because it was reported this morning, actually, that it was all staged. Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant knew that joke was coming, and they decided to roll with it. It was such good acting that people really thought that Kevin Durant was mad at the joke. I'm pretty sure you saw this moment, Isaac. It was so good on social media because even Rachel Nichols tweeted out, yeah, there's no response from Kevin Durant after that joke. Many people wondering whether or not he's really ticked off about it. But it was all staged. Kevin Durant, I think he has a career in acting after his playing career is said and done.
Wait, I'm totally befuddled. That was staged?
It was staged. It was all staged, man.
I could not tell. And I was, of course, as you know, Al, I don't watch really award shows that much, but I was following along on social media. That's my customary procedure whenever one comes about. And I saw Kevin Durant tweet out about 5 minutes after the joke, the emoji, just with the total blank face.
He played it up.
I can't believe that was staged.
He played it up, man. He played it up very well.
He got me.
And Russell Westbrook as well. Russ knew it was coming as well. So
Russ, I can see as an actor, though. KD, I didn't know he could act. Credit to him.
For sure. But, you know, there were so many great moments. Peyton Manning did one heck of a job. And then probably my favorite skit of the whole thing was when he actually went to a retirement home. He had a great skit with a bunch of senior citizens. And it was hilarious. I don't want to spoil it for you. Check it out. I'm pretty sure you can find that with a quick Google. But there were so many cool moments. Michelle Obama, our nation's former first lady, as classy as she always is, she came, got a standing ovation as she, of course, presented an award in honor of Eunice Shriver, who is the founder of the Special Olympic Games. Very cool stuff. And a few of the winners last night, to briefly go through some of my favorites. The Golden State Warriors won Best Team. That was presented by Samuel L. Jackson. Best Male Athlete, Russell Westbrook. Best Athlete and Best, well, I should say Best Female Athlete and Best Female U.S. Olympic Athlete went to the Michael Jordan of Women's Gymnastics in Simone Biles. Best Male U.S. Olympic Athlete and Best Record-Breaking Performance went to Michael Phelps. Best breakthrough athlete, how about them Cowboys, baby? Dak Prescott, quarterback for my Dallas Cowboys. Best NFL player, Aaron Rodgers. Best game, the Patriots and Falcons Super Bowl. Best championship performance, Kevin Durant. Also, we saw some great cameos from other players, such as Russell Wilson, an Olympic skier, Lindsey Vonn. Also, how about your boy Odell Beckham Jr.? And Dove Cameron presenting the award for best play, which was a very cool moment as well. And then watching all of the suits, the fashion is always, I'm always curious to check out who's rocking what and what. And Kevin Durant, you know, he just came with like, I don't even know what he was wearing, like a T-shirt and maybe like a jacket over it, not really dressing up in a suit. Russell Westbrook, who's always different, wore like these green and white track pants with like a half open button up short sleeve shirt, which I thought was pretty different. And a lot of fly suits in the house as well. Also, the Icon Award went to the great, iconic sportscaster, Mr. Vin Scully, Bryan Cranston, who is, of course, known for Breaking Bad, one of the greatest TV shows in the history of television. He gave a speech that would send chills up your spine, putting in perspective the impact that Vin Scully had on the sports broadcasting industry. Great stuff, Isaac.
It was great all around. I've got to give the best dress, though, to the winner of the Jimmy V Award, Jarius Robertson. He's a little kid, 15 years old, who actually suffered with lung problems throughout his, or liver problems, excuse me, throughout his entire life, leading to a collapsed lung after the age of 1 year old. He was in a coma for an entire year, and then his family decided to pull the plug. Finally, this kid, the fighter he is, kept breathing. 13 years later, he needed another liver transplant and just got it. He's been through over 32 surgeries, two liver transplants, and all the while, he's produced moments that none of us can really forget, moments that just have you smiling from ear to ear, moments like this.
What's up, baby?
How are you? You want to sign my belt?
Yeah, champ. It's heavy. Oh, this is heavy. You got a hand over there?
Yeah.
I saw you knock down that jump shot yesterday. That was nice.
I shoot better than you.
I want your chain.
Man, everybody want my chain. Why?
I need it.
No.
I'll switch you your chain for my watch.
That's a really good watch, man.
No, you took too long. Deal off. Deal off. You took too long. You took too long to decide. You took too long.
You fake.
You gotta be my boy.
Huh? My man.
You're not gonna like me.
Huh?
I don't like your teeth.
Yeah, Jarius Robertson, again, just so charismatic. Those interactions, of course, with DeAndre Jordan of the Los Angeles Clippers and Draymond Green, former Spartan, at the All-Star Game. Jarius made his rise to fame when actually the Saints organized a visit to his hospital when he was receiving treatment for that liver. And Thomas Morstead, a punter on the team, took notice of him, immediately recognized his charismatic effervescence, and managed to just keep on bringing him to the facility until he got noticed by the entire world. Jarius, really, I couldn't think of somebody to better represent the city of New Orleans. So proud of him and so proud to see him represented on such a grand stage like the ESPYs. The Jimmy V Award, maybe the most important of the all.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fantastic homage to those that have come through, that have gone through crazy hurdles in life. And watching Jarius, you know, it's hard to for I forget that he's 15 years old, because you know what he's gone through, it actually stunted his growth at a very young age. He's 15 years old. He's so charismatic. He's so confident. And, you know, looking at the video montage and his speech afterwards, it was great because his father, Jordy Robertson, along with his mother, Patricia Hoyle, they were on stage with him, and they wanted to stress just how important it is for people to sign up as organ donors. That's so important and is the reason why Jarius was able to take the stage last night, because he just received a new liver, which is great right now. It's functioning quite well for him right now. He's doing well. He's getting better by the day. He says he feels good, feeling great right now. And also, I thought that his dad did a great job in stressing that, you know, in order for Jarius to live, a different child had to pass away and die.
Mm-hmm.
And without that child signing up as an organ donor, who knows the condition that Jarius would be in right now. So I think that's so important. And Jarius did a great job with his speech last night. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, you will get to hear from the new band director of Michigan State University. His name is David Thornton, and we'll discuss the backdrop that has led to this new hire of David Thornton. We'll put all of that in perspective in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. You know what? I want to go back in time just a moment. I think that's fitting because each and every Thursday we have Throwback Thursday for you, right? But I want to go back to an interview that we had on February 10th of this year. That was such a busy day here on our airwaves because That was the day where Spartan Nation tried to process so many stories. Because on February 9th, if you remember, news was released that three, at the time, unnamed MSU football players, whose names are now Demetric Vance, Josh King, and Donnie Corley. That was the first time we heard news about a sexual assault allegation concerning those three. We also, on that same day, found out news when it came to Demetrius Cooper, an assault charge against defensive end Demetrius Cooper. And also that same week, a sexual harassment charge against now former MSU, I should say soon to be former MSU band director, John T. Madden. We tackled it all throughout that hour. And throughout that hour on February 10th, we talked with Rachel Fredette, campus editor of the State News, who provided exclusive insight about what went into breaking the John T. Madden story as it pertains to sexual harassment. Before we introduce you to the man who will now be taking over as Michigan State band director, who goes by the name of David Thornton, I want to just recount that interview that we had with Rachel Fredette of the State News. Again, this interview took place February 10th of this year. How did you all get your hands on this story? Did the student approach you all?
Actually, she did. A few months ago, Jake Allen, my co-author, received the documents from this young woman who has chosen to remain anonymous. And it was a package of documents that we were able to kind of go through, figure out what exactly happened with her story. So, yeah, we received them from her.
So she came in person or did she call you guys?
She is actually not within the state. So she sent us all of this information and, yeah, she did it all while she was not here.
So you guys basically just got a bunch of documents from her and just sifted through. I mean, how many documents are we talking about?
At least 100 pages of just wow. Documentation with the university and her own research. So, yeah, it was a lot of stuff to kind of comb through.
Now, before she reached out to you guys in talking with this young woman about what she went through, when it first happened, now I kind of just want to go through the timeline here. When it first mm-hmm. happened, what did she go through before she reached out to you all?
Well, from what we've had and with conversations with her, which she had chosen to remain off the record for. So we had just kind of quotes that we had from her, but she chose not to use them. She's decided to not be in the story. But according to the documents she had and a friend who we did cite in the story, who has also chosen to remain anonymous, they talked about her struggle and what it was like for her to deal with something like this. She had worked very hard to get on the band and then to have someone who had power over her kind of treat her like this. And obviously MSU found that he had sexually harassed her under the RVSM policy. She is no longer at the university, if that says anything about what this situation has been for her. I think it appears just like hearing from what she's said and what she's gone through, even if you just look through the documents and our story, it affected her greatly. She went through so much, and I think it's very sad, and I was glad to be with Jake and report on it and tell her story for sure.
So what was the reaction from you two when you receive information like this and you start to go through it? I know you guys felt ideally a responsibility as a journalist to make sure you cross your T's and dot your I's to make sure everything is accurate and you go about reporting this responsibly. What was the conversation between you and Jake like?
Well, for the past 3 months, me and Jake have had a million conversations about this. We actually had a few other reporters, Bridget Kennedy, Marie Wiedmeyer, who also are part of the State News staff, go through all these documents, perform this research. It's been tough to know how to really be as responsible as we could be. We've been working as hard as we can. It's been a struggle because you see something like that, and then you see the name, John T. Madden. John T. Madden has been here for 27 years. That is a big story. So we wanted to write it with care, and we wanted to make sure that we told her story with the utmost respect. And it was definitely a challenge, because when you see that name, John T. Madden, and how many people look up to him and all the stuff that's happened, you have to be extra careful with the reporting you do, for sure.
Rachel, what kind of emotional state was the student in when talking about the story? And because it takes a lot of courage to come forth and to put yourself out there like this. Mm-hmm. Why did she decide to do that as well?
Well, I actually did not receive the documents. Jake had the story and brought me on. But from mm-hmm. what Jake has told me, from the interviews I've listened between the two of them, she brought the story forward because she wanted to bring to light what had happened to her. She wanted people to know what band director Madden had done, how it had affected her life and her own goals, like what she was going to do. She's not currently here at the university anymore. She still takes online classes and other things like that, but she's no longer here. I think it just speaks waves to how leadership and people who are in those roles can affect someone so much, especially with whether or not they abuse their power or they use their power for good.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call in. If you have a question for Rach, you can call in and pose that question, and Isaac will patch you right through. But Rach, can you take us through? Because I know you guys have a very detailed timeline that accompanies the online version of this story. Can you take us through and give us specific dates and what exactly happened on those dates mm-hmm. as the story rolls along? Because when I was looking at it, I mean, I was a bit, I don't even know what the word. I was a bit taken aback mm-hmm. because I've talked with John. I've done multiple stories on him, and you know I was out at the Rose Bowl and we did this whole feature on the band, mm-hmm. and I just couldn't believe, you know, that something like this could have taken place, you know. And mm-hmm. For our listeners out there that don't know the story though, can you kind of take us through that timeline?
Yeah, for sure. So starting in November of 2015, their conversations were via text. So she had received a job within the band. They were working closely together. So he started to text message her, and it started with the first text message. We have a few different ones within the story. It was, when the season ends, we're going ice skating. I'm an old hockey player. A little lighthead, like not really sure what's going on there, but it quickly escalates into the one that has become the whole story, which is obviously the night of huddle, which is a thing, like a tradition for the Spartan Marching Band. It's like their end of the year party. He was not in attendance. And so what he did was he was texting the student. Mm-hmm. And what happened was there was this conversation that quickly seemed to have escalated. The big text message that really is the core of the story that tells what this was, the sexual harassment, was, pics of your dress are required, ... discreetly, of course. The student sent Madden a group photo because she wanted to play it off. That's in the court documents. I mean, not court documents, but the documents. That's the main story, if you ask me, is like that text message is the sexual harassment, is him asking for pictures of her dress. And then after she responds, like puts the group photo in, which she says was to play it off because obviously that was a very uncomfortable text message to receive. He said, blingy dress, A+, I'm a fan. So he graded her the way she was looking. Mm-hmm. Later that night, he said this, which made it very clear that he realized what he had done was wrong. Especially, I don't know if you quickly realized it or if this was just trying to blow off what had happened, but he said, just finished my conducting gig, having a couple beers at a local bar. Sorry for being a creepy texter. So after all of that went down, Madden and her had a conversation. There was a phone call. I think it was like about a week later. Yeah.
So this wasn't in person. This was via phone. They talked on the phone. Okay.
Yep, they talked on the phone. It was February. This is now February 27th. It's about a period of about a week that this has gone through. Mm-hmm. The student decided to go forward. She brought her story to the assistant director of bands, David Thornton. And then Thornton brought it to Jim Forger, who is the dean of the College of Music. The story gets taken there, and then obviously it's mandatory reporting. It was reported to the Office of Institutional Equity. The Office of Institutional Equity obviously investigates these things, whether or not they're violation of RVSM policy, which is relationship violence. and sexual misconduct policy that MSU has. They began the investigation in February 2016. It was the 29th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the process went on, and the official report, which was written by a senior investigator, was dated on April 28th. So that's when it was released to both of them. Deborah Martinez was the name listed on the documents we did receive. She was a senior investigator. They found that the evidence was showed that he had an authoritative position and a behavior, and he had performed behavior of sexual or intimate contact. And it said, if the respondent Madden requested photographs because of sentiment over missing the event, as he suggests, there is no need for anything to be sent discreetly, with like little quotations around
quotation
it.
Quotation marks,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So obviously citing his text message. Forger wound up sending this letter, which is also we include in there. It was basically on Madden regarding the disciplinary action that would be taken against him. So the main story here also, which is what her lawyer says in here, what she has told us about it, is his punishment for this such behavior, sexual assault, not sexual assault, sexual harassment, which is part of the RVSM policy. He received, I think he received it on, yeah, in May, he received a suspension for a week without pay. It was May 27th through June 3rd.
Right.
Madden was also banned from the 2017 huddle, which he had already not attended the 2016 huddle. And his promotion to a full-time professor was delayed until October 1st, 2016. So he received a delay in his professorship and a 1 week without pay, which also included Memorial Day weekend. So mm-hmm. he already had a few days off there.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep, that was the main source of the story.
When it comes to the victim in this story, Rachel,
mm-hmm.
does she feel like the punishment it was justified? Does she feel vindicated at all?
Personally, for her, we had discussed it with her, but her lawyer has made it quite evident. I think the perfect way to kind of cite that is to use the quote that was in the story by her lawyer, if I can pull it up.
Yeah, please.
He made it very clear why they were upset, what this had to do with her and her life and what she had been through. And I think it's just very evident how it affected her. Mm. And yeah, where is it? Let me look.
And I'm also seeing here that John T. Madden also issued an address
mm-hmm.
To the Spartan Marching Band, because he knew this was going to come to light. And he knew he had to issue an address. And I see you guys have a photocopied
mm-hmm.
version of that address to the Michigan State University Marching Band.
Yeah. We reached out to comment from him. We tried to call, but they were gone for the weekend. So we reached out via email. And he said, thank you for the opportunity to comment. And he gave us the speech he gave to the students on August 31st, because that's another interesting part of the story. He had to go in front of the band and talk about this without really talking about it. It was a very broad sort of conversation. So that's what he said. He sent us his speech for his comment.
Do you have the quote from the lawyer as well?
It's sort of buried. It's a very long story.
It is a long story.
It's something along the lines, actually, that says, take one, like, yeah, here it is right here. It notes the student would be finishing her degree online. The letter says, Forger attempted to make Madden's punishment seem significant and appropriate. But says the university did little more to Madden than the following. Take one unpaid week of vacation, wait 3 months, and we will promote you as planned and skip a band party next year.
So if I had to read between the lines there, mm-hmm. probably not too happy with what took place in the aftermath of her telling her yeah. story. She's okay now, though, right?
Yep, she's doing okay. She's moving on. I think Jake has talked to her recently, and I think the best way to say this is that she's moving on. That's the quote we got from her. So, yeah.
What do you all hope that individuals who read a story like this, what do you hope the reader takes away?
I think the best way to explain what you take away from writing a story like this is very hard. And not only for like a reporter, God knows it's hard for her and people, the victims. You, as a journalist, you write things and you hope people get reached. You hope people read it. You hope people understand what her experience was like. I think she is an extremely strong person to want to come forward and say all of this with a lot of the things she's been dealing with over the past months. And it's our job, both Jake and I, to tell that story when someone comes to you and tells you that they were either mistreated or something had happened and it was kind of being shoved under the rug. It's our job to tell the truth, and that's what we try to do here.
Rach, I'm curious, before we get you out of here, I know you gotta book it in a second here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know what the reaction, since you guys have published this story, what the reactions from readers have been, because I know there's been a few out there. I've been reading comments left and right, and there's some that says, oh, what's the big deal? He didn't mean it. He's remorseful. There are some that will say that. What kind of reactions have you gotten?
Well, in the comments, I've seen a lot of reactions. I've seen great messages of support, some calling for him to be fired. Others I have seen that I find a bit shocking, saying it wasn't enough of a sexual harassment and that she should get used to it because the real world will show her other forms of this. And I think that's extremely disheartening to think that he didn't sexually harass her enough. I've never heard anything like that before. But we're trying to stay strong. Our reporting is strong. And the story, you hope that people will understand what happened and that he was found by the university in violation of this policy. So he did sexually harass this woman. So despite what the commenters may want to decide for it, he did sexually harass her. So I think that's an important thing to take away from that.
So with that being said, the Spartan Marching Band has a new director. Meet the new guy behind the baton who will lead 300 Spartan musicians, that being David Thornton. Our very own Jamie Paisley stole a bit of his time.
This has been the summer of madness for you because of many different fronts, not only being named a new Spartan Marching Band director and symphony band director, but also other events have been kind of converging at the same time.
That's correct. There's been a lot going on with the job transition, obviously, which I'm incredibly excited about. My wife and I just had our first child at the end of April, so we have a 9-week-old at home. Her name is Taylor, and she's doing great. And we're also in the middle of trying to close on a new house, so there's a lot of things happening, all good things, and we're feeling very fortunate.
In terms of your association with MSU and the College of Music, the most high-profile thing is with Spartan Marching Band. But there is also that bit that I just mentioned a second ago, the symphony band as well. How much do you kind of ride that line of spending time between the two of those?
I think they're both incredibly important and both equal components to my job. I take the concert band component of my job, if you would, very seriously, and I'm really looking forward to being able to lead this terrific group and make some really terrific music this coming fall.
Are you also at all kind of doing pedagogy in terms of conducting?
Yeah, I teach. My new duties will involve me teaching the spring semester conducting class, so our music ed majors and our composition students have an opportunity to take 2 semesters of conducting, and so I'll be doing the second semester of that as well.
Any specific year requirements for that?
Yeah, they're rising juniors in their music ed program, and so...
That seems about the right time.
Right, exactly. So in addition to all of that, I'm also the director of the Spartan Brass that deals with the athletic band, so we play at volleyball and hockey and basketball games, and so makes for an exciting year for sure.
In terms of students that are part of the marching band, they don't have to be music majors at that point. What is that kind of breakdown to?
I think you could say that we have about 30 or 40 music majors, so that's about 10% of the ensemble. Most of our students come from all areas of campus, all different colleges, they have a variety of interests in what they're studying, and so it's an eclectic group. It's a very smart group. We're really proud of our students. They're all really great students, and they're really involved in all of the other facets of campus as well.
You're coming into the marching band leadership position in a time when there's a big microscope on the whole community based on what had happened a few months ago with the controversy that got a lot of press about your predecessor and colleague and friend, John Madden. Has that been addressed?
I think that what we're doing is we're celebrating John's career and we're happy for him in his retirement, and we're looking forward to continuing to be the best band that we have, that we can be here at the university, and continuing to be a great ambassador for the community and the football team and, you know, MSU in general. You know, this is a real honor. I've been telling people this is a dream job, which I really believe that. And I'm really humbled by the opportunity and looking forward to working with our great students and the great, you know, community here at MSU. And go Green.
David Thornton officially took over the reins of the MSU Spartan Marching Band, Spartan Brass, and Symphony Band on June 14th. More information on Thornton can be found online at the MSU College of Music website, music.msu.edu. For WKAR, I'm Jamie Paste.
Thank you so much, Jamie. So that kind of puts in perspective the situation that the Michigan State Band is undergoing right now, under the tutelage of a new band director in David Thornton. We'll have more dialogue between Isaac and myself on tomorrow's Current Sports concerning that story. In the meantime, we have just about a few minutes left here, 3 minutes to be exact, and we invite now live in Studio S Current Sports intern and reporter, Mr. Jacob Herbert. Jacob, first off, how you doing, my man?
I am doing great. How you doing?
Friday Eve, right? I wanted to invite you in because you have a take when it comes to what many people consider to be the best Michigan State hockey player on the roster deciding to chuck up the deuces and take his talents to the professional world. Did you agree with the move?
No.
When it comes to Mason Appleton, I should say.
Yes and no, but mostly no. I think it was a bit of a premature move, not to say that it was the wrong move for Mason. I mean, you and I were talking during that break there. If you've got a chance to make the money, why not? He's going to be making roughly $750,000 a year in the Jets organization. But he led the team in almost every offensive category last year. He, like you said, he obviously was their best player. But that was his first. His rookie season wasn't that great. He obviously stepped it up.
Right.
I just think he has a lot more room to grow before making that jump to the NHL level.
Yeah,
and he's got the perfect coach to do that in Danton Cole.
Exactly. You know, and I always say strike while the iron is hot. But I could have seen both sides of this as well. But yeah, interesting stuff. Again, Michigan State coming out and saying that Mason Appleton has signed an entry level contract with the Winnipeg Jets. Jacob, thank you for your take on that.
Thank
you all for listening. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Take care, and as always, be easy people.